supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we got one of those jam-packed shows for you today, cats and kittens. In the question of the week, we'll be offering some unique Valentine's Day gifts, things that may not have crossed your mind, but that are both horticultural and practical for the gardener in your life. We're also going to be talking about turning maple sap into maple syrup. It's a lot to get done, so we better hustle right on to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Steve, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am just fine. And where is Steve great?
I'm a few miles east of Hershey, PA.
Where we grow all the chocolate in America.
That's right. We've got chocolate trees everywhere.
Yeah, I'll bet. That would be truly weird, Steve. What do they call it? Is it the sweetest place on earth or something like that?
That's their claim to fame.
Yes. So what can we do for Steve at the sweetest place on earth?
We have quite a few acres here, and I'd like to take a small plot and turn it into a garden, a vegetable garden. Right now it's seeded with hay, and I'm wondering what the best way to eliminate the hay is from the area we want to plant vegetables in.
Well, are you going to harvest the hay?
No, I want to convert it completely to vegetables. So now the hay was harvested in the fall.
Okay.
And it'll come back up in the spring if we don't do anything.
Right. So there's stubble, but it's not an annual stubble, which would be to your benefit. It's a perennial plant.
Exactly.
Yeah. How big an area are you hoping to truck patch?
About a quarter acre to start.
Okay, so that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot. The smartest thing I can think of off the top is create a stale seed bed. Very much the same advice I offer to people who are going to install a brand new lawn, which is to till up everything that's there and then try to rake away as much of the green material as you can. And because this is a pretty tenacious perennial, you're going to really have to do your work trying to get as much as you can out of there. And then level the area you wish to garden really well and water it. You know, we know there's going to be a lot of stuff coming up.
Right.
So we really want to encourage it to come up quickly. Are we going to do raised beds, or are you going to try to flat earth?
Yes, sir, raised beds.
Excellent, excellent. While we're waiting for all our weeds to sprout up, what I want you to do is scope out your raised bed situation, just with stakes and string. Make your 4-foot wide beds. You can make them as long as you want them, but scope those out with strings and stake to identify the areas that'll be growing areas. And you know the rule with raised beds, no more than 4 feet wide, so you
right.
can reach the center without stepping in. Make the lanes a good solid 2 feet wide. You'll never regret having wide lanes in between your raised beds. And then in about 7 to 10 days, you'll get your weeds coming up. In the raised bed areas alone, I want you to use the sharpest hose. You know, there's these little, really, they're like razor blade hose, and they actually have replaceable heads like razor blades.
Okay.
Get one of those, get a bunch of blades, and as soon as we get to like the 10-day, 2-week period, slice the little heads off right at the soil line. And that generally is enough to steal all the energy from any plant. Then, as soon as you establish your stale seed bed, lay cardboard, a single sheet of cardboard over, again, all the growing areas, not necessarily your walking lanes, but the growing areas. And then are you going to frame out the beds, or are you just going to mound them?
Just mound them.
Okay. Well, then start pouring on your mixture of compost and high-quality topsoil. And the combination of the stale seed bed technique, which eliminates 95% of even the perennial weeds because you're getting them when they're so young, and the cardboard should give you a good growing surface. And then really the only question is, what do you want to do with your walking lanes? And I will tell you, since you have this crop plant coming up in them, you might want to do what our youngest editor, back when I was the editor of Organic Gardening magazine, our youngest writer, Jill Jesielowski, she used to deliberately leave things like grass and hay growing in between her raised beds, and she would mow them or whack them with a weed whacker, and that kept the lanes from getting muddy.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the disadvantage with mounds is, you know, that is going to try to creep into your mounds, so you might want to frame off the sides that are next to the lanes. You might even want to start framing the sides slowly over the years. But basically, that's it. You do that prep work. You might get a little bit of a late start. You'll still have time for all your summer crops. But as you know, those raised beds are going to retain heat. They're going to drain better. So you'll be able to have a nice fall planting, and you'll really hit the ground running the next spring.
Okay. That sounds great.
All right, Steve. Good luck, man. It's a great adventure.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. You take care, pal.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Cynthia, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am doing just fine. Cynthia, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful, thank you.
And where is Cynthia doing wonderful?
I am in Cary, North Carolina.
What can we do for you in North Carolina?
We bought our house about 2.5 years ago. The house was probably built about 13 years ago. We have a very large river birch growing in our front yard. And we found out the hard way over the holidays that the roots have now invaded our sewer service line coming from the house. And we were told by the plumbers that we need to replace all of the sewer lines. Do I have to remove this beautiful tree so I don't have to replace the lines again?
I would not remove that beautiful tree. The river birch is absolutely one of my favorite trees.
Yeah.
A great four-season interest tree. The bark alone makes it a tree worth keeping. It also leads me to believe that the area it's planted in has always been wet. Is that correct?
It stays nice and shady. We have a wonderful, it's the only part of our lawn where the fescue grows. So it stays nice and cool and moist there.
Right. There's a lot of water there. Typically, a tree like a birch would, you know, suck up a lot of water, and maybe the grass wouldn't grow near it. And people have this misconception. They think if they have a wet area and they plant a willow there, somehow the willow will transport all this wetness to another dimension or something like that.
Yeah.
And really what you get with a tree that can survive wet feet is a tree that can survive wet feet, that does well in soil that does not drain well. And because these trees, you know, they do have a somewhat aggressive roots.
Yeah.
But as in the case of bad police work, the wrong suspect has been identified.
Uh-oh.
The culprit is not the tree.
Oh, wonderful.
The culprit is the pipe.
Oh, okay.
Which was probably installed improperly.
Okay.
May have been made of substandard materials.
Uh-huh.
May have been subject to shifting.
Because
it's great to have this comic book image, isn't it, of this tree all of a sudden going, I want to cost these people $3,500.
Exactly.
And I'll wrap my roots around this pipe and I'll break it apart and then I'll send my roots down it looking for trouble.
Exactly.
In reality, what happens is the innocent roots are wandering around the yard. Oh, let's find water here. Let's find nutrients here. And the pipe be leaking. And there's a crack in it. So during a dry period, there's water coming through this pipe. So the tree roots are naturally attracted to where the water is coming out of this drip and this crack. And they get closer and closer to it. And then a marriage ceremony is performed.
Gotcha.
But it had to be a bad pipe before that would happen. So, yeah, you got to get all the roots cleaned out of the pipe. Then there are some cheap and sleazy tricks you can use to lower the cost. What I have been led to believe is the smartest thing in a situation like this, and you have to find the right kind of contractor, but this is a technique that's well known, is they slide a new pipe inside the old pipe.
Oh, that's genius.
So that's why I get the big money. That's why you called. Come on.
Yes.
I'm not here cutting coupons, you know. So that's the case. You carve out all the roots, and then they slide in this pipe that just has a slightly smaller diameter than the other pipe. And, of course, you make sure it's very structurally sound, and that should take care of the issue. Got to make sure there's nothing going wrong, though, with heaving, that there's no instability in the ground. For instance, perhaps this pipe went over an area of construction debris that is uneven. So that's something that might need to be checked. But if the ground is solid and there are no issues that will lead the new pipe to bend unnaturally, to have unnatural forces acting upon it, the insert pipe should be the answer to your troubles without nearly as much chaos on your lawn.
Oh, this is wonderful. The tree is 30 to 40 feet high, and I was so sad thinking I was going to have to get this thing taken away.
Oh, no, we're keeping the tree.
Oh, you just made my day. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
This is wonderful. Thank you.
All right, you take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Upper Dublin Public Library in Fort Washington, PA on the evening of Monday, February the 17th, teaching homeowners how easy and beneficial it is to get their lawn off drugs in a fundraiser for the Friends of the Upper Dublin Library. That's at 7 p.m. on Monday, February 17th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with turning maple sap into maple syrup, the best Valentine's Day gift suggestions for a gardener you ever heard, and lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Verbi supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 70 new varieties for the 2014 growing season, including Steakhouse, a 3-pound-plus beefsteak tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at verbi.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, very important information for men. A couple of interesting Valentine's gifts that will be both practical and romantic and, of course, horticulturally inspired. We're also going to take a couple more of your fascinating phone calls, but right now it is time to welcome our special guest, Amy Mauby, who is the Director of Public Relations at Tyler Arboretum, where they are getting ready to celebrate the turning of sap into syrup. And every year, Tyler Arboretum has what they call the Maple Sugaring Celebration. And this year, it's on February 22nd from 8 to 1. And it's an orgy of maple syrup, right?
Exactly, exactly. It's a way to get families and the public into Tyler to learn about where their food is coming from. And so we're able to bring them in, show them the maple sugaring process, teach them about making syrup from sap. And then they also get an all-you-can-eat pancake and sausage breakfast. So really, you can't go wrong with this event.
Yeah, what would gardening be without sausage, ladies and gentlemen? Now, I just returned from Cuba. And one of the fascinating things there are the amazing fields of sugar cane and the sugar processing industries that they still have. But maple syrup is kind of America's sugar.
Exactly, exactly. And it definitely dates back to the Native Americans. They were utilizing maple sap and making syrup before the colonists settled. And the colonists actually learned from the Native Americans watching their techniques. And they would actually slash into the maple trees, use a little piece of bark at the end of the slash to kind of channel the sap into a bucket that they would carve out of birch wood or other types of woods. And then they would actually take the sap and put it in even a bigger shallow barrel. And they would use hot stones and throw it in the sap to try to evaporate it and do the process. It's so funny to think about how they were turning sap into syrup compared to modern day techniques.
So I was wondering that because today, you punch a hole in the side of the right kind of maple tree, you have some tubing, leads to a little metal bucket, and then you pour it into this giant cauldron. And you boil it down. But Native Americans didn't have giant cauldrons.
Exactly.
So they threw hot rocks in.
They did.
I just had this flash to my wife and daughter making cakes and cookies in the house. And, of course, the sacred licking of the spoon. I wonder who got to lick the rocks.
Yeah, afterwards.
Yeah, those were probably some good rocks
most
down
definitely.
Now, when we've done maple syrup on the show before, and I find this whole thing fascinating because it's sugar from a tree, a type of tree that the vast majority of people have in their landscapes or nearby. And every year we do this, I always feel that I've missed it because the season starts so much earlier than people think. I mean, the basic concept is when the weather gets really freezing cold, the sap concentrates in maple trees. And then, as every pruner knows, maple trees bleed like Chuck Wepner. I mean,
right.
As soon as you cut them or put a hole in them, that sap comes pouring out. And it is the gradual warming of the temperatures that forces the sap out into whatever you're containing it. But it just seems to happen so quickly. You have to be ready really long before it even starts to get mildly warm out, right?
Right. Yes. Yeah. So I think on average, the time frame for Pennsylvania is about mid-February through mid to maybe a little bit later in March. It could start at, end of January, but I think it's really that mid-February into mid-March. It's like a 5 to 6 week span. So yes, you definitely have to be ready to go. And, if you're a homeowner trying to look to do this, you also need to have your equipment all set, ready to go. You also have to be able to identify the sugar maples in your property because you don't want to tap into an oak and, disappointed.
You might create something
exactly.
new.
Exactly. You could be an inventor. The time window is so quick because we need the freezing nights. So nights need to go down below zero. And then we also need to have warming temperatures during the day. So it's above freezing. So below freezing at night, above freezing during the day. The warm cold is really important because right now what we're seeing is cold, cold. We're having cold nights and cold days. So at this point, sap is not flowing. This is a horrible time to, even think about trying to tap a maple tree. But we need to really get to the point where we have those cold nights, warm days, and then warm is also an issue. So there becomes a point where maple sugaring is not an option because the sap is then being used to, going to the buds and the trees coming out of dormancy. So it's really that kind of magic window when it's warm during the day and cool, really cold at night.
And once it starts to get warm, the syrup turns bitter, right?
Exactly. There is a process that goes along. We lose that, again, that magic of the sugar content in the sap.
Because it's my understanding that first sap that comes out on the first warming day. That's like the Godiva chocolate of the syrup.
Right. Yes. I would assume that you would want to kind of prep getting closer to that time frame when you know and you're tracking the temperatures. You probably can anticipate and drill and put your spile, which is the kind of the metal spout, into the tree. And there's different techniques where you can hang a bucket directly onto your spile. There could be tubing, like you're mentioning, into a bigger container. I know there's also bags that people hang from the spiles. So there's a lot of different techniques and materials out there that you can use for maple sugaring.
Now, we did talk for just an instant about identifying a sugar maple, and the best time to do that in the fall is, right?
Yeah. If you're a novice or an amateur gardener, you definitely want to take advantage of when leaves are on the trees and you have a better chance of identifying which maple you're looking at. In the winter, it's something that you can do. It just takes a little bit of training and a good eye to be able to look at the bark and know what you're looking at, as well as looking at the buds. Because in maples, they have the rule with opposites. So they have opposite buds, and you'll want to look at opposite branching and try to figure out from those winter clues what tree you have.
But the best way is to look for that spectacular fall color. Doesn't the sugar maple have a color unlike any other?
It does. It has a beautiful color. They're really tall trees. They can get up to 100 feet tall and just amazing foliage as well.
Yeah, for somebody like me, even with 25 years in the game, I'm going to look at the leaves and I'm going to put a post-it note on that tree, this one, just
yes.
So I don't get lost.
Right.
Now, the thing that most people fail to understand is the tremendous dilution of sugars that you're getting. I mean, if you taste this stuff coming off the tree itself, it's barely sweet.
Exactly. So the maple sap that's coming out of the tree is actually about 2-3% sugar. So we have a lot of water that we have to get rid of in order to bring it up to the percentage that we have in syrup, which is anywhere between 66-67% sugar in maple syrup.
That's a long way to go.
That is a long way to go. So, you know, it's the whole evaporation process that you're taking gallons and gallons. You're actually taking about 40 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup. So it really is a process that you can definitely get into as homeowners, but you can appreciate when you see the dollar signs on the maple syrup containers in the grocery store at a market, you can appreciate why our maple syrup is a little bit pricier, because there's a huge process that goes into it. People are really doing a lot of labor and love to make this super sweet treat.
Maple syrup, what an amazing concept, taking the sap of a tree and turning it into this just delicious concoction that I can't even imagine waffles or pancakes without. It would be a sad, sad world.
I agree.
Without maple syrup. All right. Amy Mauby is a director of public programs at the Tyler Arboretum, where they will be holding their maple sugaring celebration on February 22nd. As always, you can find all the information at the event section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Amy, thank you for taking time away from your taps to come and speak with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And now back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Penny, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing just fine, Penny. How are you?
Terrific. Thrilled to be talking to you. You're a hero of mine.
We'll take care of that pretty shortly. So where is Penny Terrific?
I'm calling from Frankfurt Friends School in the Frankfurt section of Philadelphia.
Oh, good Lord, you're giving me a flashback. I grew up at Bridge and Tarsdale.
No kidding.
I went.
Then you know the neighborhood very well.
I think so. I went to St. Bartholomew's. And
okay.
Then I went to Northeast Catholic High School for boys, but my friends went to Frankfurt.
We're a pre-K to 8th grade Quaker school, not far from Frankfurt High.
And where are you?
At the corner of Orthodox and Penn Street.
What can we do for Penny at the Frankfurt Friends School in a fabulous neighborhood? I called it Taconi Mayfair, actually, when I was growing up.
Well, thanks. I think it is a great neighborhood. We have just acquired a vacant lot that's about 4/10 of an acre across the street from our school. there had been a large stone church on it, and it was demolished by the city 2 years ago. Our plan is to create an outdoor playground, an outdoor classroom playground for our kids, where our kids can play and garden, explore nature, have science classes, whatever. The question I have is that when the church was demolished, all of the rubble was put down into the basement of the church. So we actually have many feet of rubble covered by perhaps 2 inches of what gardeners call crappy soil.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a plan. We've worked with the design team for a year. We have a lot of wonderful volunteers eager to go. When we put out bids, what we found out was landscape contractors were giving us different ideas. A couple of them said we had to have all of the rubble removed to the tune of $75,000. Other landscape contractors have said, nope, just bring in a foot of good soil, and you can plant on it. And then yet another contractor said, dig deep down and get out the rubble where you want to put things like shade trees and bushes. But for places where there's just going to be grass or we have a meadow for our pollinator garden, you can just bring in a foot of soil and you'll be okay. So 3 different ideas, very different costs, obviously.
Yeah.
And so I wondered what you would suggest.
Okay, so we got a church basement.
Right.
Filled with used to be
stone.
A church.
Yes.
Okay. And where did the dirt come from?
Oh, I'm sure the city brought it in from somewhere.
Okay. Has anybody tested the dirt?
We have not yet because we just assumed we would be getting rid of at least the dirt.
Why?
Well, we assumed it was city dirt full of lead or whatever.
This is so interesting with it being a church, because if it had been an old building, then, there'd be asbestos, there'd be lead paint. But the fact that it was a stone church makes this an interesting situation. You know you're going to have darn good drainage, that's for sure.
We do have that.
I would have the dirt tested without any presumptions. The soil lab at the state university, which in Pennsylvania is Penn State, mm-hmm. Will tell you the levels of lead and any other heavy metals or anything like that. I would definitely want to get what you have tested. I think you'd be crazy to start hauling rocks out of there. That would be absolute madness. What I would instead suggest, could we perhaps raise this area up 6 inches to a foot?
Yes, that was actually something that 2 different landscape contractors had suggested.
Okay, they're your guys.
Okay.
They're your guys.
All right, good.
And what you want is you want that new soil to be a mixture of compost and high-quality topsoil, tested topsoil, tested compost, because we got kids. You can get the same kind of results, soil test results on compost and topsoil as you can on your funky dirt. And then, as you're filling in this area, don't forget, there's probably going to be some hardscaping, right? There's going to be pavers. There's going to be walkways.
Yeah, there'll be walkways.
So
we're not quite sure what the material will be.
Yeah, that's always dicey in this situation. You know, I like stone. I like pavers. The recycled tires and stuff spooks me. There might be real hip stuff you can get now with bamboo or something like that. But try to stay away from old car tires, at least.
Okay. Now, what about where we want 2 sides to be shaded by trees? We have a little tree nursery that we've got going at school. And should we dig deep for those trees?
No, people misunderstand. When trees are planted, they need to be high in the ground. They don't need to be planted low. They don't need to be staked. The trees will do fine. Just pick the right tree for the spot. The tree will send its roots down through the soil. When it gets past the soil, it'll go down into the rocks. It's going to find soil that's going down there. You know, trees are really good at taking care of themselves.
All right.
So when the trees are planted, make sure that they're planted high, not low. Make sure that they're not staked. And don't let anybody pile up mounds of mulch around the tree or make rings around them. Go for a walk through Pennypack Park, which is right nearby, right?
Uh-huh.
And if you see a tree that has mounds of mulch around it that nature did, then go ahead. If you see a tree that nature staked, fine. if you see a single tree that doesn't have a dramatic root flare above the ground, then you don't have to imitate that. But nature figured this out a couple of hundred thousand years ago. So you want to see that dramatic root flare above ground. It don't need no support. It don't need no fancy things around it. You're going to be right next door so you can keep it well watered. Imitate nature. Get these kids started learning by the first tree that they see.
Right. And for the pollinator garden, what we were hoping was to be able to use mostly native plants, obviously. The foot of good compost and good topsoil, that's enough for them, root system.
You will be able to grow anything you like.
Oh, you're wonderful.
Well, it's not
just $75,000.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. But it's not like I'm Aquaman. It's not like I'm telling the plants they're going to grow there. Nature loves this kind of a situation. Lean into nature. If they start recommending all sorts of artificial stuff, call us back. Let nature do her thing and just stand back in awe at her might and majesty.
Thank you so much. I appreciate this tremendously. Take good care, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind folks who are planning to start their own plants from seed for the very first time that you'll get the best results with professional seed starting containers. Old eggshell cartons don't cut it. A soil-free seed starting mix, because your outdoor dirt ain't nothing but trouble. And artificial light, because sunny windowsill is actually Latin for tall, sad, and spindly. But don't go looking for all the details under S in the A to Z Answers section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and the best things you can give a gardening sweetie for Valentine's Day. I'm Sweet Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY-FM in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 70 new varieties for the 2014 growing season, including Steakhouse, a 3-pound-plus beefsteak tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll be getting to some unique Valentine's Day gifts that I guarantee will delight any gardener who receives them. But before we get to those gifts, a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Bradley, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey there, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being had. Brad, where are you?
Calling you from sunny San Diego.
Oh, I love San Diego. It's so nice there.
Maybe not as warm as your trip to Cuba, but we like to enjoy the sun when it comes out.
Oh, La Jolla, Sunset Cliffs Drive. I mean, if I've been in the United States in a place that was perfect, I want to go back. Yeah, you've ruined me forever, man. What can I do for you?
Let's see. So originally I was going to call you to ask about kind of a nice-to-have feature, but given how dry and how little rain we've had here in the last probably 18 months, it's turned into a need-to-have feature, and that is ways to kind of help my plants to get self-watered,
right,
whether it be through some kind of device or, and then also maybe water conservation. So originally what I had tinkered with were some ceramic devices that you plant into the ground and then you either fill them up with water, or another one is you put an actual wine bottle recycled, filled with water, and then tip it upside down and you put it into like a ceramic spike that sits into the ground.
Your soil
and that's supposed to leak out water.
Yeah, everything's supposed to do something, isn't it? No, your soil's too sandy,
right,
for those little that's like small time. There is before Bob Rodale was killed in that tragic car accident in Russia in 1990, he and I collaborated on a book for the Third World. And there's an entire chapter in there on water harvesting. It's called Save Three Lives. It was published by the Sierra Club. And in that chapter on water harvesting, we must have filtered like 8 books on the topic down into one dynamite chapter. One thing you can do in areas of your landscape that you're not actively using to grow plants, because the San Diego landscape has large open unplanted areas, right?
Right. I guess I should also mention I'm mainly planting in containers as I rent my house right now.
Oh, okay. When you move up, tamping down the soil to make it impervious and making little channels that lead to a single tree is a genius way of getting nature to water even during really dry times. What kind of containers? What are they made of?
Just about one of everything. I've got a couple trees and whiskey barrels. I've got planter boxes that have root vegetables, 5-gallon buckets with a tomato plant, so forth.
In San Diego with containers, you need solid sides for your containers. You need them to be thick and water-holding. And you need a heavy mulch on the surface of the soil. As to these automatic watering things, these bottles you turn upside down, you know, I don't know. That's not my style. And I know that San Diego has a very moderate climate. You know, you're not Phoenix, Arizona in the summertime. So my suggestion is the old school, no bare soil. Make sure you have a nice cooling 2 inches of mulch on the surface of your container soil to hold the moisture in it. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time. No unglazed terracotta or other pots that wick their moisture into the atmosphere. Otherwise, you're wasting your time. And then what we're going to do is we're going to teach you to water your containers the way everyone should water a house plant, which is you get an ordinary watering can and you go out and let's say that Brad has a dozen even containers. So he's got this watering can filled with water. He goes to the first container. He does not empty the watering can into it. He just goes around in one quick ring. And then he moves on to the next container. And then the next container. Everybody gets a little drinky. Then you go back into the house. And this is where having ADHD can be a plus. Because maybe you get distracted by something. You come out 20, 30 minutes later. You do the same thing again. Little bit here. Little bit there. You never water a container all at once because most of it will come out the bottom. But by slowly saturating the soil, now a container that would dry out in a day is going to stay saturated for 4 or 5 days. The idea is to water excruciatingly slowly, like a half pint at a time, 8 times in a row.
Awesome. Okay.
All right, man.
Appreciate it.
Okay, now drive out to La Jolla. Go out on Sunset Cliffs Drive. Go out on one of those little promenade things where everybody's doing yoga and meditating, and look for the humpback whales for me. Promise.
I will. I will tell the seals you say hello.
All right, man.
I'll be going. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Carol, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Carol. How are you?
I'm very fine, thank you.
Very fine. And where is Carol very fine?
In Ridley Park, Pennsylvania.
Very good. What can we do for very fine Carol in Ridley Park?
Okay. For years, I have been trying to grow a curly willow tree and my pussy willows. They seem to be able to grow for about 2-3 years, and then the curly willow gets these black marks wherever there's a bend, not really a joint, a bend, and then it dies. I don't know why. And then the pussy willows also die, but they don't have any signs of the same thing.
Okay, Carol, now, I don't mean to be insensitive here, but you realize saying I can't grow a pussy willow is like saying I can't get my dandelions to come along.
I know. I don't understand it myself at all because they grow just fine, be about 7 foot tall, and the curly willow grows to be about 8 foot tall. And then all of a sudden, the curly willow, like I said, gets these black marks.
Couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Are you planting these trees yourself?
Correct.
Are you buying them bare root, bald, and burlapped, or in a pot?
No, I start them from shoots.
Oh, okay. And how do you start them from shoots?
In water.
Okay. How long do you let the roots get before you transplant them?
Maybe about 2 inches long.
Okay, so good. So you don't have this hydra's hair. You're just sprouting them.
And then right.
You're planting them in soil.
Correct.
Okay. Is it in or near a lawn?
The curly willow is not. The curly willow is in sort of a, what I call a raised garden. It's where I have all my irises, and I have the curly willow.
And the irises are doing fine.
The irises are perfectly fine.
Okay. And the other one is in a lawn.
The pussy willows are along the edge of a lawn.
Is the lawn treated?
Not at all.
No. Okay, good. So
I listen to you. No chemicals at my house because I like the bunnies to come.
There's no...
I don't want to poison any bunny rabbits.
Well, I wouldn't poison them, but I wouldn't exactly put out an invitation to come eat my lettuce, Mr. Bunny Rabbit.
Oh, well, now I have raised gardens. They don't climb into the raised gardens.
Okay. My bunny rabbits bring little siege ladders to get into my my raised beds. Are you mulching these plants?
Not at all.
Are they getting good air circulation?
Definitely. They're in an area of my house that sort of does get a draft. It's a very breezy area.
Okay, so good air flow. How much sun are they getting?
They get the afternoon sun, say from 1 o'clock on.
Okay, good. You're finally giving me something to work with here because otherwise I'm making big X's on this. Okay, so far on the You Bet Your Garden scale or score of being a great gardener, you're getting a 97. The only thing I can think of is morning sun. Now, where are you getting your parent plant material? Where are you getting
I got it from the flower show. When they have all the different stands, I try to look for ones that are really have lots of green to them and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bring them home, put them in a bucket, and wait for them to sprout the roots.
Okay, so you're buying these from the florists.
Correct. Yes.
Okay, so these plants.
Because I don't see them in garden markets.
Oh no, you can buy curly willow and you can buy black willow. You have to do some looking. Matter of fact, when you go to the flower show again this year, you can ask around at displays and see mm-hmm. which landscapers carry it and stuff. One, this might not happen if you planted it in a location where it gets morning sun. I've actually been surprised by how much of a sun hog my pussy willow is.
The more sun, the better.
And morning sun. Morning sun cures the kind of conditions you've been describing.
Okay.
But I will go further and suggest that because these are plants that have been passed through the hands of a florist, as opposed to you getting cuttings from a gardener,
Okay. They
have perhaps been treated with preservatives, or they have been waxed to maintain their internal moisture, or things have been done to them to keep them looking fresher and better longer, that over the long term make them poor choices for taking cuttings from. We try this again. We plant them in an area that gets morning sun. But I would also urge you to try to find different genetic material to start with. Find somebody who's got one or buy one and cultivate it, because those are the two things that don't belong on this edition of Sesame Street. The fact that these went through the hands of a florist and were certainly treated with something, and the fact that they're not getting morning sun.
Okay.
But I think you can do this.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Valentine's Day. How to say I love you with moths and lumber. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, would you read the first of our romantic questions this week?
Sure, Mike. John in D.C. says that he has, quote, caught Mike in an error. He writes, last year you recommended a phalaenopsis, or moth orchid, as a Valentine's Day present, and said that a plant with lots of buds still unopened on the stem might still be showing flowers in July. I took your advice and bought a plant for my wife that only had a couple of open flowers and a lot of buds still on the stem. You were wrong. We had flowers opening up through mid-September. This seems especially impressive because I generally can't make anything grow in the yard or in a pot. So thank you for your suggestion. We also heard from Grandpa Jim in Germantown. That's the Washington, D.C. area Germantown and not the neighborhood in Philadelphia. He wrote, I want to thank you for your tip on giving a butterfly orchid instead of roses for Valentine's Day. I found one at a local florist and had it sent to my wife Joyce at her office. It was a big hit. New blooms just kept opening up. So you seem to have guided at least two men through the treacherous path of St. Valentine's Day giving.
Yeah, and both of those guys did it right. I always recommend a phalaenopsis because it's the hands-down easiest orchid to care for, and the flowers last so much longer than cut roses. And John maximized his investment by choosing a plant that still had lots of unopened buds, which guarantees a long flowering display. Imagine a, quote, Valentine's Day flower that was still in bloom on Labor Day. And Jim gets bonus points for having had his delivered to his wife's office. Now, that's a brilliant move that allows her to show off his very thoughtful gift without any actual bragging.
Oh, that's right. All the other ladies are thinking, look what she got.
Yeah, so God help the poor hubby who has a half-eaten Whitman sampler waiting at home.
Now, Mike, John called it a moth orchid, and Jim called it a butterfly orchid.
Well, members of the Phalaenopsis orchid family have a series of flower buds running up and down their stem. When a good number of the buds are open, the flowers look like little butterflies in flight. But when the plant was originally discovered, the flowers were felt to look like a synchronized swarm of native tropical moths. So the official common name, if such a thing would ever exist, is the moth orchid. But you can certainly call it a butterfly orchid if you like.
Any advice on care?
Well, there's good long-term orchid advice in the A to Z Answers section of our website. For right now, just be sure to protect that orchid or any other kind of orchid from cold weather. These are tropical plants that have to be wrapped really well if they have to go outside. And if you have to move them, make sure they go into a warm car, not a cold one.
So a phalaenopsis with lots of unopened buds is the perfect gift.
Yes, as are red tulips, which literally mean I love you in the ancient floral code known as the language of flowers. But I'd also like to recommend a couple of other ideas, like the gift of a raised bed for folks who are still flat earth gardeners.
So that would mean giving your honey an IOU for one raised bed to be built.
If you're handy, sure. But you can also buy kits that contain everything you need to create a perfect 4x4, 4x8 raised bed. Hardware, bed frames, corner posts, and joiners. Once that gardener sees how much easier it is to grow a summer garden in a raised bed, they'll want another one every year. Hey, and to totally tie it into the Valentine's Day holiday, you can write, for your apples of love, on the card.
Apples of love? You mean love apples?
Well, tomatoes were once thought to be an aphrodisiac.
All right, Romeo. Any other bright ideas?
Well, every gardener wants to see the Philadelphia Flower Show, the largest, longest-running indoor flower show in the world, at least once. And those who have seen it once want to see it again and again and again. So treat your sweetie to the real greatest show on earth with some very special perks. If you buy them a membership in the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, the sponsoring organization, they'll receive flower show tickets and have use of the exclusive members' lounge at the show.
A place to sit down and take a break.
A comfy place to sit down, take a break, compare notes, edit your pictures, and gear up for the next round of being awed and amazed right there on the show floor. And there's even complimentary coffee and tea.
That is a nice bonus.
But wait, there's more. Members also receive Green Scene magazine throughout the year, and they get discounts at the PHS store and selected vendors on the flower show floor during the show.
And the part I like best is discounts on admission to lots of botanical gardens throughout the year, right?
Absolutely. Like the orchid and the raised bed, Philly is a gift that keeps on giving. Well, those sure were some interesting Valentine's Day gift suggestions, now, wasn't they? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to mangle my moths if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. And as we always like to say, if you do choose to send us an email, please, please tell us where you live. Please, please. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Lunes, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Al Banks. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's internet illuminators. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our editor is Al Banks. Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. A huge welcome to our brand new production assistant, Marissa Nicosia. A welcome that I may have already delivered last week. And we'll be taking bets on whether I welcome her again for the first time in a future show. I'm clearly the sap running between the trees, Mike McGrath, and I'll see you next week. Is the soil in your landscape old and worn out? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss whether replacing the dingy dirt in your beds will lead to better results, plus your fabulous phone calls.